First of all, does anyone like sheep? Yeah?
I'm a slave.
I like certain parts of them. But my title for this morning is I Hate Sheep. I Hate Sheep. I hope I can defend you, but we'll see why later. First of all, before we go any reading, I just want to do a very brief recap of the sort of where we left off the story. Joseph
told his true identity to his brothers. And God has revealed to Joseph his plan to save life, his plan of preservation of life. Joseph has sent his brothers to bring his father and family back to Egypt with all their belongings and families so that they wouldn't starve to death. If you remember last time, I don't know, you might not have all been here, but I talked about seven and the things that sort of were running through that particular chapter about seven and how there were 70 Israelite male descendants who would be living in Egypt once all of these came to live in Egypt, which was another multiple of seven. And we pick up the story today where Jacob and his family and livestock arrive in Egypt. So let's read from chapter 46. We're going to read verse 28 to 34. So Jacob's getting... Jacob and his family is getting quite close to Egypt now. Then he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out before him the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. So Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel, and he presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face," because you were still alive. Then Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, 'My brothers and those of my father's house who are in the land of Canaan have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for their occupation has been to feed livestock, and they have brought their flocks and herds and all that they have.' So it will be when Pharaoh calls you, you say, and says, 'What is your occupation?' that you shall say, 'Your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth, even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to Egyptians,'" or "every shepherd is loathsome to Egyptians," might be a better understanding of it. Partly you might understand now why I've called the title "I Hate Sheep." In verse 28 to 29, we see Joseph and his family arrive at Goshen, which is really the land of Ramesses. The Egyptians called it Ramesses. That's one of their gods, what they had. And this particular land was especially fertile, green land, and they called it the land of Ramesses. It was the Israelis which called it Goshen. And Judah is sent to Joseph to tell him that they've arrived. As soon as Judah arrives, Joseph is off in his chariot. That is in verse 29. So as soon as he's told that his father's here, he gets straight off in his chariot and off he goes. This is equivalent to us jumping in the fastest mode of transport we've got and getting there as quick as we can, because the chariot was the fastest form of transport that they had. He didn't just get on an horse and ride out there. He didn't just get his camel, you know, and get on his camel. But he got his chariot with multiple horses, you know, that they would have. And he would get to get there fast. He wanted to see his father. He was desperate to see his father. So he chose the fastest form of transport that he got. So he goes to Goshen. And in verse 29... I'm just going to read this. So Joseph made ready his chariot and went to Goshen to meet his father Israel, and he presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept a good while. In verse 29, we see another part of Joseph's dream is actually fulfilled. Joseph and his father Jacob are here reunited for the first time after nearly 30 years. Time's moved on really, really quickly, hasn't it, through the story of Joseph. Joseph and Jacob meet. Each had thought the other was dead. And here they are, alive, and meeting again for the first time in a long time. Joseph throws his arms around Jacob, and he cries, and he cries, and he cries. Have you ever been like that? You know, so emotional at something or with someone that couldn't even speak. And you can imagine that that's how Joseph was, that he'd been waited so long to see his father and thought that he was probably even dead by now, that he just all he could do was cry and hug his father. At this very second, the whole of Joseph's original dream had been fulfilled. Not only were his brothers here, but also his father were here. And really, all of them were at his mercy, weren't they? He was in charge. The first thing that I want us to note this morning is, and we're going to look at another scripture, no matter how long it takes God, he always brings about the things that he says he will do. One chapter, and a few verses in it, which is famous for this, and is a good interpretation of this, is Habakkuk chapter 2. I'm just going to read you verse 1 to verse 3. This is what it says here. I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart to watch and see what he will say to me. This is Habakkuk. And what I will answer when I am corrected. Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak, and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. Lost one of my bookmarkers. I'll try and keep my finger in there. And in these three verses, even though it's not part of what we want to do this morning, I just wanted to pull out something which I've actually preached on before, but has sort of come afresh to me this morning as I've been looking at this. 5 points or principles which can be applied to any God-given dream or vision or anointing to see its fulfillment. First of all, Habakkuk says, I will stand my watch. And what that means is that he wasn't actually standing about doing nothing. He meant that he was searching God. You know, he was waiting on God in prayer. He was meeting with God regularly in a special place of prayer, just him and God. And that's an important point for us, isn't it, that we have to stand our watch. You know, we have to wait on God in a special times of prayer with just me and God, just you and God. Those special times. Secondly, Habakkuk says, and to watch and to see. We have to look for the God-given dreams and visions to come. But not only that, we have to look for the answers and the fulfillment, don't we? We have to keep looking. It's not just not doing anything again and then forget it for months. But we have to keep watching, don't we, for what God is doing. Sometimes things start in such small amounts, don't they, in little things. And then they come big. Thirdly, he says, listen to what he says to me. Important part of Christian life is carefully listening to what God tells us, isn't it? Sometimes through his word, sometimes through prayer, sometimes through visions or dreams, sometimes through prophecy. Can you imagine if you spent all your life asking questions but never listened to any of the answers? What a waste of time that would be. But sometimes we do that with God, don't we? We ask God so many questions and then that's the end of the prayer and off we go. We don't wait for him to say, well, this is what I'd like to do, if you'd cheer up for a minute. Fourthly, for Habakkuk, he said, make it plain on tablets. In other words, write it down. When was the last time that you wrote down something that God especially told you? You know, something special that God has blessed you with, that he's done for you, that he reveals to you from the word. It says, write it down. What is the importance of that? It keeps it fresh in your mind. It's as a reminder, it's as an encouragement of what God's told you. Also, as here, so that other people could read it as well. It was something what people could read. So it's important, isn't it, that if God gives us something important, that we need to keep it fresh, don't we? And if we write it down, then it helps us remember it. And the final thing in this third verse in Habakkuk is, wait for it. And the it part of this is the vision. Notice it doesn't say wait for God on that one, because that's the first one where we wait on God. The last one is wait for it, the vision, the dream, the anointed to come. It says that there's an anointed, appointed time by God for everything under heaven, doesn't it, in the word? There's a time for everything. There's a season for everything, for every event to take place. Up to now, it has nearly took 30 years for Joseph to come to this realization of his dreams. Verse 3 says, the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Important words about dreams and prophecies, those, aren't there? It's not in our time, it's in God's times. Although it seems to be taking its time, I'm talking about our dreams and visions now, maybe it seems to be taking its time, it will surely come. Because it's God that's promised it, and he's not, like us, slack concerning his promises. We so easily say, oh, I promise you I'll do that. And then, if it's like with me, the day after I've even forgot what I've promised. God's not like that. And we are so good at receiving dreams and visions and promises, but not so good at waiting for the appointed time to come, are we? That's the hard bit. Keep praying. Keep watching, keep listening, keep it written down, keep waiting for it to happen. And as the song says, as we've recently been singing, we'll keep the faith. That's what we have to do, isn't it? It's all about keeping the faith in what God has told us to do. Now, if we go back to Genesis 46, I'm not going to read the verses because you can read these at home if you want, but the story sort of continues in verse 30 to 34. And Joseph instructs his brothers and their people what to say when Pharaoh asks them their occupation. So really he's priming them a little bit, isn't he? Saying, you know, when you get in front of Pharaoh, this is what I want you to say. Because he didn't want him to say anything wrong. And Joseph instructs his brothers and their people what to say when Pharaoh asks them, particularly their occupation. And let me just read you verse 34 again. And this is what it says, that you shall say, your servant's occupation has been with livestock from our youth, even till now, both we and also our fathers, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. That's a sort of quite a funny thing to say, isn't it? Could easily skip over that, but you see where I've got my title from now. The Egyptians hated shepherds and sheep, even though they had their own. Well, that's very, very strange to me, and I wondered why. It doesn't really say, but I've got a suggestion which may help us to understand. If you think about the story so far, they are 2 or 3 years into a world famine, so everybody's. Not only them, everybody's starving. People are coming from all over the world to Egypt to get food. There wasn't much grazing land left, if you think about it. The people that did have cattle who lived there would want to have their cattle on any land that was worth grazing on, wouldn't they? Even the people were having to buy grain and food off Pharaoh, so they didn't have any, so they wouldn't be feeding their animals. There wasn't much grazing land left. The last thing any Egyptian would want, if you think about it, is strangers bringing thousands of sheep to eat on what was left of their grazing land. You can understand that, can't you? The other thing is that, and I didn't realise this till I'd looked it up, that Goshen is documented as being good, one of the best grazing areas in the Eastern Nile River Delta. Sort of makes a little triangle. And this Goshen, land of Goshen, is smack in the middle of it. And it's sort of prime grazing land. due to the Nile making it fertile. So you can imagine that any livestock that were still alive, that hadn't starved to death or been eaten by the people, would probably be the kings, you know, pharaohs, and they would probably be on this delta, this Nile River delta land, this land of Goshen. So you can imagine what the people of Egypt were thinking when they see Jacob and his tribe of people, however many they were, and thousands of animals, or however many animals they had, arriving at Goshen, which is their favourite grazing land, their best grazing land, and so they're unpacking everything. I can imagine them saying, they are stealing our prime grazing land. I can imagine if I were there, I would be saying, doner kebabs! Because they're hungry, aren't they? These people are hungry as well. Yeah, lamb chops. It's all there, isn't it? That's why it's so amazing what God caused Pharaoh to do for Joseph's family. If we didn't understand what the significance of the land of Goshen was, we won't understand the significance of what Pharaoh did next. I just want to read chapter 47, verse 1 to 6. This is what happened when they actually come before Pharaoh. Then Joseph went and told Pharaoh and said, my father and my brothers, their flocks and their herds and all that they possess have come to the land of Canaan, that come from the land of Canaan, and indeed they are in the land of Goshen. And he took five men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to his brothers, what is your occupation? And they said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers. And they said to Pharaoh, we have come to dwell in the land, because your servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now therefore, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen. Then Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land. Let them dwell in the land of Goshen, and if you know any are competent men among them, then make them chief herdsmen over my livestock. I'll just leave it there for now. So Joseph sets five of his brothers before Pharaoh, and he asks the question that he's sort of trained them in the answer of. He asks them their occupation, and they say, we are shepherds. We've always been shepherds. That's what we do. That's where our families do. And they ask to live in the land of Goshen. You could actually miss what had happened there if we wasn't looking at it carefully. They asked, said, please let us live in the land of Goshen. Why should he? Why should he let foreigners from a foreign land with however many sheep and cattle they had come and graze on the king's, you know, land, prime grazing land? Quite a cheeky thing to ask, wasn't it? But the astonishing thing is what God does to Pharaoh's mind and heart here again. But Pharaoh doesn't throw them out or tell them to go elsewhere. No, because of the influence of God on Pharaoh, look what he does in verse 6. He says, have your father and brothers dwell in the best of the land, and let them dwell in the land of Goshen, and if you know any competent men among them, then make them chief herdsmen over my herds and stock. I bet some of this didn't go down very well with some of the Egyptian people. Not only does Pharaoh tell him to let them live in Goshen, but also give them the best grazing land in Goshen. That's quite a result, isn't it? That's probably the best that they could have hoped for in coming before Pharaoh with what they got. In all honesty, if you were Pharaoh and not under the influence of God, you could quite well tell them to go away, couldn't you? And say, we've only got enough land for our own sheep to graze on. Also, anyone good at shepherding was to be made chief herdsman over Pharaoh's livestock. Wow, a double blessing, you know, a double result. That's extra, isn't it? That's a lot more than what they expected. I don't even think they expected Pharaoh to really say, oh yeah, put your sheep on the land of Goshen. That tells me, and it showed them, that God always does more than we expect. You know, he always does more. He always does better. We sort of set the boundaries and parameters of things what we think, yeah, that would be brilliant if God did that. And God just goes, you know, and does more. It says in God's word that he can do exceedingly abundantly above all that we can ask or even imagine. That's in Ephesians 3, verse 20. You can have a look at that if you want. That is a verse to instill confidence in God's ability, isn't it? He can do exceedingly above not only what we can ask for, but what we can imagine. They couldn't even imagine that Pharaoh would do that for them, could they? That he would even let them put their cattle on the land, never mind make some of them, you know, in charge of his own cattle as well. I just wonder what the poor old Egyptian shepherds thought, you know, when this happens, and they bring all their sheep on and now they're in charge of us as well. You can imagine that wouldn't go down quite well, but I wonder if the influence that Joseph has had on Pharaoh in the way that he'd administered everything and looked after the famine and stuff, maybe Pharaoh thought, yeah, I'll have some of this blessing on my cattle as well. You know, you never know, dear, how, you know, God had influenced him. You could understand that if he thought that, couldn't you? This brings us to verse 7. And when I got to this, I thought, yeah, this is, you sometimes can pick a verse out of a chapter and think, you could easily miss that, but it's an absolute belter. I love this verse. You'll see why in a minute. Then Joseph brought in his father Jacob and set him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh. I think you know where I'm going with this already, don't you? I think this is the best and the funniest verse that we can find in chapter 47. Even with the story, what's going off, Joseph brings Jacob, his father, to see Pharaoh. He brought his brothers earlier, now he brings his father. So you can understand the story, can't you? At this point, Jacob is 130 years old. It tells us that in verse 9. We're not going to read it just yet, but he's 130 years old and he's before Pharaoh. Look at what happens. Jacob blesses Pharaoh. A poor, dirty, old shepherd blesses the most powerful man in the known world then. However he does that, I don't know. Can you imagine the scene though? This old dude comes up to Pharaoh, probably on his throne, in his gold and in all his finery. You know, and you can imagine him starting praying for him, you know, and saying, God bless him. You know, this is Pharaoh and a dirty old shepherd man, if you like, you know, what's just travelled 150 miles to get to Goshen. He's praying for this man. You know, he's blessing this man. He's asking God, you know, invoking God's blessing on him. Think about it, Pharaoh could have had him chopped to bits for just speaking, you know, without being asked. He's got that power. Never mind invoking the presence of what would be a foreign god on Pharaoh. Pharaoh had had some dealings with the god of Jacob and Joseph, hadn't he? But to him, it was a foreign god. In comparison, it's like you and me going before the queen for something and saying, hold on a minute, Queenie, I'm going to pray for you. You know, and you're going to lay your hands on the queen saying, Lord, bless her, Lord, help her rule. You know, you can imagine it's not done, is it? You wouldn't do it. But yet, this old shepherd man in his ragged clothes and or wherever he'd come in is there blessing Pharaoh, praying for Pharaoh, asking God to bless Pharaoh. It's sort of an amazing little verse in the middle of, you know, a story, and it doesn't seem to fit in the story really, but it's put in there for a reason, isn't it? What possessed Jacob to do this? Exactly. We all know what it was, don't we? It was the Spirit of God. It was the power of God on Jacob. It was the boldness of knowing God's power at work in him. And it's the same for us, isn't it? That's what gives us boldness to do things which seem sometimes quite odd and out of place. Odd, and you think, how do that? Jacob blesses Pharaoh. What a picture that must have been to see. Can you imagine the armed guards of Pharaoh? I can't imagine what he's done. I can't imagine him letting him touch Pharaoh. But can you imagine what they must have been thinking? Because they never left Pharaoh's side. You know, that this man prays for Pharaoh. You know, that blesses Pharaoh. Just to finish off this part of the story, because it changes a little bit after this, I want to read verse 8 to verse 12 of this chapter 47. Pharaoh said to Jacob, this is after he's just blessed Pharaoh, Pharaoh says to Jacob, "How old are you?" And Jacob says to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 150 years. So that's why I assume he's 150 years old. He says, "Few and evil have been the days of my years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimages." So he's talking about the previous people in his family that maybe he's not as old as they were. He's not been as spiritually blessed as they were, I don't know. "And they have not attained to their days of their pilgrimage." So Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went from before Pharaoh. And Joseph situated his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. Notice there the word possession. He gave them the possession. In other words, he didn't just say, "Yeah, you can go and graze on that land." Says it's yours. No, you can have it. That's an amazing result, isn't it? "The best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with bread according to the number in their families." It's a bit like the food bank, isn't it? Joseph is sort of, you know, giving them all the bread and everything that they needed to survive in the place where they had come. So gives them the grazing land, the flocks can survive, you know, they can live, they've got the best land. Also it gives them jobs to do, also it gives them food to eat straight away. That's an amazing result. That's the best result that could ever happen, and that is because God always exceeds our expectations. What an outcome. Everyone arrived safely. Joseph and Jacob reunited after nearly 30 years. Jacob and his family given the best land to live on and bread to eat. Our God is an awesome God, isn't he? He turns around situations. He does more than we can expect or can dream of. He truly does make all things work together for the good of his people in his time, when the timing is right. Amen.